Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. Today, we're tackling something that's been on my mind a lot lately. Modern India. I mean, the place is just buzzing with growth, right? But there's this shadow side. Like, not everyone's getting a piece of that pie.
Right, yeah. It's a bit of a paradox, isn't it? You see these impressive economic numbers, but then you realize the reality on the ground can be a different story.
Exactly. So we're going to dig into that, try to figure out how India can have such a booming economy while still grappling with these huge inequalities. It's like, imagine a speeding train, right? Some people are riding first class, enjoying the scenery, while others are clinging to the outside, just trying to hold on.
Ooh, that's a good analogy. It really captures the unevenness of it all.
So let's start with the engine of this train. The economy. Our sources, they're all talking about major growth, particularly in agriculture. We're even seeing record-breaking food grain production.
And that's significant, historically speaking. I mean, India used to depend heavily on food imports, right? Now, they're not only feeding their own huge population, but they're exporting surplus food grains. But as you said, yeah, not everyone's benefiting equally from this boom. And that's where this idea of wealth inequality becomes super important.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Wealth inequality. Just how bad is it? Like, on a global scale, where does India stand?
Well, there's this thing called the Gini coefficient, right? It's a way to measure how evenly income is distributed within a country. And for India, that number's pretty high, higher than many other developing economies, which basically means, yeah, there's a significant gap between the rich and the poor.
So it's not just about how big the pie is growing, it's about how it's being sliced up. And it sounds like some folks are getting much bigger slices than others. Now, something that kept coming up in our research was the Mandel Commission. Can you give us some background on that? What's its role in all of this?
The Mandel Commission, yeah. It's actually a pivotal piece of the puzzle. It was set up back in the 70s to address social and economic inequalities tied to the caste system. You know, that whole social hierarchy thing that's been a part of Indian society for centuries.
Right.
So the commission recommended these affirmative action policies, reserving government jobs and spots in education for historically marginalized caste groups. It was a controversial move, but definitely a big step in trying to even the playing field.
Okay, so we've got this historical system that's created these deep inequalities. The Mandel Commission comes in, tries to make things a little fairer. But then on top of all this, you have this rapid economic growth happening at the same time. I'm wondering, how's all that growth impacting social mobility? Is it making it easier for people to climb the socioeconomic ladder? Or are those old barriers still holding strong?
You know, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Sadly, a lot of the evidence suggests that social mobility in India is, well, it's still really tough. Even with the economic progress, it's incredibly hard to break free from the socioeconomic conditions you're born into. Things like access to good education, healthcare, even social networks, they all play a huge role.
So even with a booming economy, it's almost like where you start in life still massively dictates where you'll end up.
Yeah, it's a harsh truth for many Indians. And some of those historical factors, things like the way the British set up their education system, often favoring certain groups, you know, that still has a ripple effect even today.
It's kind of wild to think something from centuries ago can still have such a grip on people's lives. Speaking of history, though, I was reading about how land grants were used as a tool of social and economic control. Is there a connection there to the inequalities we see in modern India?
Oh, absolutely. Land, it's always been tied to wealth and power, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way those historical land grants were handed out, often skewed towards certain groups, it still shapes land ownership today. So, yeah, that feeds directly into those economic disparities we're talking about.
So we have this, like, this messy tangle of history, social hierarchies, and then this rapid economic growth all happening at once. Some people are definitely riding the wave while others are getting left behind. The question is, what's being done about it? What's out there to try and bridge this gap?
Well, there are a number of government programs and policy initiatives aimed at tackling these challenges. One big focus has been on improving education, especially in rural areas where opportunities have historically been limited.
Right, that makes sense. Give people the tools to succeed.
Yeah.
Now, something that caught my eye was this idea of a digital learning paradigm. Is that like a potential game changer here?
It definitely has that potential. The idea is to use technology, right?
Yeah.
To make good education more accessible, especially in remote areas. So think online courses, digital libraries, mobile learning apps, you know, the whole shebang. It's about empowering people with knowledge and skills no matter where they are.
Sounds promising on paper, but I can't help but wonder, are there any downsides to this digital revolution? Are there hidden challenges that could actually make things worse instead of better?
Of course, there are always challenges. A big one is bridging what we call the digital divide, making sure everyone has access to the internet and the devices they need to learn online. That's crucial. And then there's the issue of digital literacy, you know, making sure people have the skills to actually navigate this new digital world. If you don't address those underlying issues, this digital push, it could actually widen the gap instead of closing it.
Right, like giving someone a fancy tool without showing them how to use it. So no easy answers here. It sounds like there's a lot more to unpack when it comes to specific government programs and policies. What are they targeting? What kind of impact are they having?
Great question. And that's exactly where we'll pick up in the next part of our deep dive. We'll be exploring all sorts of initiatives aimed at improving healthcare, creating economic opportunities, you know, really trying to empower those communities that have been marginalized for far too long.
Sounds good. So stay tuned, folks. We're just getting started on this journey into the world of economic growth and inequality in modern India.
So picking up where we left off, you know, we were talking about government programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to tackle inequality in India. One that's been in the news a lot is this MGN Rajiv Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Act. It's a mouthful, but it seems like a pretty big deal.
Yeah, MGN Rajiv. I came across that in my research too. It sounds super ambitious. So, like, break it down for us. What's it all about? What's it trying to do?
Right. So basically, it's a social safety net. It guarantees 100 days of paid work every year to rural households. And the work is on these public projects, you know, things like building roads and stuff. The whole idea is to give people a basic income, especially those who might have trouble finding work otherwise. And at the same time, you know, they're building up rural infrastructure, which benefits everyone.
So a pretty direct way to tackle poverty and unemployment in those rural areas. Has it been working? Like, what's the verdict so far?
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag, honestly. No doubt it's been a lifeline for a lot of families, especially when times are tough.
Yep.
And they have built a lot of stuff. Roads, wells, irrigation systems, you name it. But there have been problems too, you know, the usual suspects, corruption, delays in getting people paid, and even questions about whether some of the projects are, you know, really high quality or if they'll last.
So good intentions, but maybe not perfect execution. Makes sense.
Are there other initiatives, though, that are more focused on creating those economic opportunities, like specifically targeting things like, you know, entrepreneurship or helping people develop job skills?
For sure, yeah. There are a bunch of programs aimed at exactly that. Like there's this PMKVY, the Pradhan Mantri Kaushal Vikas Yojana, which is basically vocational training. They help young people and adults, too, get the skills they need to find jobs in different industries.
Okay. Yeah, equipping people with the right skills. But here's the thing. Are there enough jobs out there for all these newly skilled workers? Like, is the job market keeping pace?
That's the key question, right? And it all ties back to the bigger economic picture.
Wow.
India's economy is growing, yes. But the number of new jobs being created, it hasn't always kept up with the demand. And some sectors, especially those hit by, you know, automation or competition from other countries, those are struggling.
So even with those skills programs, people might still have a tough time finding decent work. Sadly, yeah, that's a real risk. And it really shows how we need to think bigger, you know, not just about creating any jobs, but about creating good jobs, jobs that pay a living wage, that offer benefits, that kind of thing. And we need to make it easier for people to start businesses, to be innovative, so we can create more of those good jobs.
So it's like, it's a multi-layered challenge. It's not just skills or jobs. It's the whole environment, making sure it supports real, sustainable growth that lifts everyone up.
Now, let's switch gears for a bit. Let's talk about healthcare. How does that fit into this whole inequality puzzle?
Healthcare, it's fundamental, right, to everything, really. Social well-being, economic well-being, the whole package. The sad thing is, in India, access to good healthcare is, well, it's often tied to your income, where you live, your social status, all that. So the folks who are already struggling, they're the ones who often have the least access to basic care. Yeah, it's like a double whammy. You're already facing disadvantages, and then you're more likely to get sick and face even more hardship if you can't get proper treatment. So what's being done about that?
There are a few government programs working on it. One big one is the National Health Mission. They're trying to improve public health care facilities, you know, make sure those basic services are available, especially for mothers and kids, trying to lower those really high mortality rates.
Those are some pretty big goals. But, I mean, India is huge. and those inequalities are so deep. I imagine there are some major hurdles to overcome, right?
Oh, for sure. One of the biggest is just a lack of doctors and nurses, especially in rural areas. And then there's the whole infrastructure thing, you know, getting hospitals and clinics built and equipped and making sure they have the funding to operate. Plus, you got to make sure essential medicines and supplies are actually reaching the people who need them.
Sounds like even with the best intentions, there's still a long way to go.
Absolutely. Healthcare, it's a huge challenge, but it's something India has to figure out if they really want a more just society. You know, a healthy population, it's crucial for the whole country to grow and develop. When people can get the care they need, they can be more productive, contribute more, you know, everybody wins.
Okay, so we've talked about those top-down government programs focused on employment, skills, healthcare. But I'm curious about, like, the bottom-up stuff. Are there community groups, you know, people on the ground who are making a difference in this fight against inequality?
Oh, absolutely. India's got this incredible network of NGOs and community organizations. You know, they're the ones working on the front lines right there in the communities. They see the challenges firsthand. They understand the nuances that, you know, a big government program might miss.
Can you give us some specific examples of what they're doing? Like, what kind of work are they focused on?
Sure. So you've got groups that are really focused on education and job training for girls and women, giving them the power to break out of poverty, to be financially independent. You've got others working on, like, improving sanitation in slums and villages, making sure people have access to clean water, toilets, all that. That has a huge impact on health, you know, on just basic quality of life. And then there are groups that are focused on financial stuff, like helping people get microloans or teaching them about managing money so they can build their own businesses.
Wow. So these grassroots groups, they're kind of like filling in the gaps, right?
Yeah.
And addressing those really specific local needs that might get overlooked. But I mean, how effective are they in, like, actually changing the system? Can they really make a dent in these huge, deeply rooted inequalities?
That's a tough one. I mean, they face tons of obstacles. You know, they're often short on resources. They run into bureaucratic roadblocks, sometimes even pushback from people who benefit from the way things are. But even with all that, they are making a real difference. They're helping people. They're improving lives. They're giving people hope. And, you know, maybe even more importantly, they're raising awareness. They're getting people talking about these issues. They're pushing for bigger changes that could make society fairer for everyone.
It's really inspiring to hear about all that work happening at the grassroots level. It kind of makes you believe that, you know, change is possible, even against the odds. We've covered a lot here, you know, government programs, grassroots efforts, the whole spectrum. But zooming out a bit, what are the, like, the key takeaways for you? What really stands out about this whole issue of economic growth and inequality in India?
That's a good question. I think one of the biggest takeaways is that economic growth by itself, it's not a magic solution to inequality. Sure, a growing economy creates opportunities. It can help people escape poverty. But if that growth isn't inclusive, if the benefits aren't shared, it can actually make things worse. It can deepen those divides that are already there.
It's like that train analogy, right? If only a few people can get on that train,
yeah,
it's not really doing its job.
Exactly. And that brings us to another crucial point. You got to address those root causes of inequality, those social and historical factors we talked about, the caste system, the legacy of land ownership, those disparities in education and healthcare, you know, all of that. These are deep-seated issues, and they need deep-seated solutions.
It's like you can't build a strong house on a weak foundation, right? So how do you build that strong foundation for a more equitable India? What are the key ingredients?
Well, I think it comes down to a few things. First, make sure everyone has access to good education and healthcare, no matter who they are or where they come from. Second, create a level playing field when it comes to economic opportunity. Give everyone a fair shot at success. And third, and this is big, foster a culture of inclusivity, a culture where everyone feels like they belong, where discrimination and prejudice have no place.
Those are some ambitious goals, but they seem essential, right? If India truly wants to make that economic growth work for everyone. Now, we've been mainly talking about what's happening inside India, but I'm wondering, are there things happening outside India, you know, globally, that are playing a role here? Like, are there global trends or policies that are making inequality in India better or worse?
That's a really important point. And it's actually something we're going to dig into in the last part of our deep dive. We'll be looking at globalization, trade policies, and those big international development programs. How are they all shaping India's journey toward greater equality? It's a whole other layer of complexity, but it's definitely worth exploring.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Let's go global. All right, so we've been talking about all the things happening within India, trying to tackle this inequality problem, but like you said, no country's an island. So let's zoom out a bit. How's globalization playing into all of this? Is it helping or hurting India's quest for greater equality?
Globalization, it's a tricky one. It's a bit of a mixed bag, really. On the one hand, it's opened up so many doors for India, right? Access to those global markets, foreign investment pouring in, new technologies coming in, all that's been a huge driver of their economic growth. But there's a flip side too. It's exposed some weaknesses, created some new challenges.
Okay, so like how specifically is globalization impacting inequality within India? Give us the details.
Well, take trade, for example. India is part of this global trading system now, right? But that means more competition. And competition can be good for consumers, but it can also hurt domestic businesses and workers. Like those cheaper goods coming in from China, that's put a lot of pressure on Indian manufacturing, led to some job losses.
So it's like you want to be part of the global game, but you also got to protect your own team, right?
Yeah.
What about foreign investment? Is that helping or hurting things?
Foreign investment, it can be a real boost for a developing economy. I mean, it brings in capital, it creates jobs, it can bring in new technology and knowledge, but it's not always a simple solution. It really depends on how it's managed, where that money's going. If it's mainly going to sectors that don't create a lot of jobs, or if it's only benefiting a small elite, well, then it can actually make inequality worse.
So it's not just about getting the money in, it's about making sure it's being used wisely in a way that benefits everyone, right? Okay, what about those big international organizations like the World Bank and the IMF? They've had a pretty big influence on economic policy in developing countries. What's their role in all of this?
Right, those big institutions. They've often pushed for those market-oriented reforms, things like privatization, deregulation, free trade, all that. Their argument is that these reforms will boost efficiency, make the economy grow faster, and eventually everyone will benefit. But, there are a lot of people who say that these policies, they can actually make inequality worse, at least in the short term. They can lead to job losses, prices going up, and less of a safety net for those who are already struggling.
So a lot of debate about whether those big institutions are really part of the solution or maybe part of the problem. Interesting. Now, beyond those organizations, what about the role of individual countries? How are other countries impacting India's journey here?
Yeah, the relationships between countries, they matter a lot. Trade agreements, development aid, even political alliances, all of that can shape economic policies and outcomes. For example, India is getting closer to countries like the US and Japan, economically speaking. That's opened up new markets, new investment opportunities. But, those relationships also have their own complications, their own potential downsides.
So, like, it's a big messy web, right? Domestic factors, global factors, they're all intertwined. Given all that complexity, are there any solutions? Are there strategies that could help India navigate all of this and create a more equitable society?
I think there are. There are a few key things they can focus on. First, strengthening those domestic policies, making sure they're promoting inclusive growth. That means investing in education, healthcare, those social safety nets we talked about, making sure everyone benefits from that economic growth, not just a select few.
Right. It's about building a system that works for everyone. What else?
Second, being smart about globalization, negotiating those trade deals that protect domestic industries and workers, attracting foreign investment that creates good jobs, and, using technology to bridge that digital divide we talked about earlier.
So, like being a strategic player on that global stage, maximizing the benefits, minimizing the risks.
Exactly. And lastly, this might be the most important one. Building a culture of social justice, a culture of inclusivity. That means tackling those root causes of discrimination, promoting equal opportunity for everyone, and making sure that everybody has a voice in shaping their own future.
That's powerful stuff. That's like a call to action, not just for governments, but for individuals, for communities, for all of us, really.
It is a call to action. Creating a fairer, more just world, it takes all of us working together. It's about recognizing that we're all connected, understanding how complex this whole globalization thing is, and then, rolling up our sleeves and building a future where everyone has a chance to thrive.
Well, what an incredible conversation. It's been fascinating to really dig deep into this whole issue of economic growth and inequality in India. We've looked at the internal stuff, the external stuff, the challenges, the potential solutions. It's been quite a journey.
The pleasure was all mine. And as we wrap up, I just want to leave our listeners with this thought. The fight for a more equitable world, it never really ends. It takes constant work, it takes critical thinking, it takes the courage to challenge the way things are, but it's a fight worth fighting because a better future for everyone, that's the prize.
Beautifully said. And with that, we encourage all of you to keep exploring, keep questioning, keep diving deep into the things that matter. Until next time, this has been The Deep Dive.